on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, October 13th, 2025 edition. And is it just me, or does saying October make it feel like Halloween? And then the holidays will be right behind it. Now, with regard to the stock market and your portfolio, now is not the time to lose focus. I know we're going to be kicking into holiday gear soon, and you're probably making plans for Halloween and all that. But it's when it comes to your money, your investment strategy, you can't take days off because there are other professionals that are trying to do what you do and better. That's what we do every day, right? So our objective here is to give you a little insight into how the professionals like us do it, what we think about, how we weigh the risks and rewards of any investments, how we assess what's going on in the market today, and adjust our portfolios accordingly. And we do this mainly by answering your finance and investment questions and bringing you data and actionable material that can help you become a better investor. Now, of course, your contributions are most important. So like I said, don't hesitate to give us a call at 888-99-CHART. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and write down the show topics for the hour. But first, let's tackle this caller question.
Hi, I have a stock on my watch list. It's Calmain Foods. Ticker symbol is CALM. It had a recent downturn. Just curious what your opinion is on a long-term hold for this. Thank you. I'll listen back on the podcast.
Looking at Calmain Foods, CALM is the symbol. Now, what do? They sell eggs, mainly. It's their main business. They operate farms, processing plants, hatcheries, feed mills, warehouses, offices, all around egg and eggshell distribution. Now, we all know what happened to egg prices. They went up a bunch, and they're still relatively high, but certainly the growth prices have come down. But you look at Calmain, their earnings are set to reverse in a dramatic way. That's why it might look cheap based on last year's earnings of nearly $25 per share. It's a $92 stock. It's about a 4 multiple. But remember, the market does not care about what happened in the past. It cares about what is going to happen in the future. And analysts have earnings down 60% this year to $10. And you might say $10 is a $92 stock, 9 multiple. That's fairly inexpensive. Well, what about the following year? Well, earnings are expected to come in at $5.64, down another 44%. So basically, earnings are supposed to drop 80% over the next 2 years. And you've already seen the turn. The first quarter of this year, earnings came in at $10.38. That was the peak. And then down to $7.04, then $4.12 in the most recent quarter, and then next quarter, supposed to be $2.24. So that's why it's in a downtrend. Prices are coming down, as well as the profits that Calmain has been making. And this isn't the only time this has happened. They made a ton of money in 2023 at $15.52, and then earnings fell 63% the following year. So it's a business that historically is what we call in the industry a price taker. And you want to avoid those type of companies. And most of the producers of any commodity, they're price takers. They don't control the price of the underlying commodity that they are producing, whether that's iron ore, whether that's coal, whether that's natural gas, whether that's eggs or some other agricultural product. They are price takers. It's typically they're low margin businesses, unless they have some low cost way to produce better than everybody else. And those are fairly rare. Now, the positive with Cal-Maine is they have no debt in their balance sheet. They have a ton of cash. They've made a bunch of money recently, and they've smartly gotten rid of all their debt. And they are taking their cash, and they've started to buy back shares a little bit. So that's a positive. But I don't like the earnings trends, and I just don't think it's a great place to be allocating money right now. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and here's some of what we have planned, time permitting. Our main focus point concerns this topic. Three costly mistakes novice investors need to avoid when investing in dividend stocks. Dividend stocks. So we're going to look at that. Also, we have other topics. Number two is tariffs. We had the tariff scare on Friday. President Trump and Vice President Vance kind of walked that back a little bit over the weekend, but still kind of up in the air. What's going to happen with China? But how has it manifested so far in the economy? Liberation Day was about 6 months ago. So how much has been passed through to consumers and how much potentially is yet to be passed through? So we'll look at that data. Also, young people are not buying homes. Part of the reason is affordability, but another is actually the stock market. Many are thinking that it makes more sense to invest in equities than it does in real estate. So we'll look at some of those stats. And then if we have time, kind of offshoot of that is how low income earners are opening more than half of new investment accounts. So what could that mean for markets as well? So that's what's on the docket for me today. But ultimately, it's about you, and we'll get to your voice bank calls. We have one on the differences between pre-tax allocation and a Roth IRA. And then Prismian. Take a look at that equity. And then questions that came in via the InvestTalk YouTube channel as well. Now, we all know you're probably making several important investment decisions here in the fourth quarter. But before you do, I recommend that you look at our new comprehensive 2025 Q4 Economic and Market Outlook Report. It's a free read, and just head over to investtalk.com to download it. We're moving to a break, and my phone lines are open, waiting for you at 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
What do you think is a good price?
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
But technically, right now, I like it. I like the momentum. But once again, I don't like those fundamentals.
Now, while gold is hitting these record highs, it's driven by the safe haven demand, by central bank buying across the board.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Calling to ask about Core in Maine.
This is Josh in North Carolina.
This is Marlo from New York City area.
Let's go take a live call. Sam from San Jose.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
Great insights. Thank you.
888-99-CHART.
You know your business inside and out. Gusto knows payroll, compliance, and benefits as well, so you don't have to. Sounds like a match made in heaven, right? Gusto is online payroll and benefits software built for small businesses. It's all in one, remote friendly, and incredibly easy to use, so you can pay, hire, onboard, and support your team from anywhere. Gusto helps you save time with automated tools built right in, offer letters, onboarding materials, direct deposit, and more. Automatic payroll tax filing, simple direct deposits, health benefits, commuter benefits, workers' comp, 401k, you name it. Gusto makes it simple and has options for nearly every budget. Get direct access to certified HR experts to help support you through any tough HR situation. It's quick and simple to switch to Gusto. Just transfer your existing data to get up and running fast. Plus, don't pay a cent until you run your first payroll. Try Gusto today at gusto.com/investtalk and get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. That's 3 months of free payroll at gusto.com/investtalk. One more time, gusto.com/investtalk.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now, Justin Klein is here taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, let's take a quick look at the market today. It was quite the bounce back after Friday's large sell-off. And it was really about the White House quelling worries around an escalation in the Chinese tariff regime. Now, it's still a lot of up in the air. It looks like this was sparked by China implementing more restrictions on rare earth minerals. And so this was, at least what President Trump is saying, is that this is trying to gain leverage over the negotiations that are coming up later in the month. And the market liked that walk back. Now, it didn't erase all the losses from Friday, but it erased maybe 60% of them. S&P was up 1.5%. NASDAQ was up 2.2% on the day. Gold continued to break out to a fresh record high, up 3.3% above $4,100 an ounce. Treasuries were closed today. So I don't know if you know this, it was Columbus Day. Equities are open, but not bond markets. Bond market was closed. No real movement there. Dollar index is up 0.3% on the day. Bitcoin down 0.8%. That was interesting. Bitcoin continues to be relatively weak. Had a big liquidation break on Friday after the regular market closed. We flushed down to about the 112 level from 122, 124 in that range, kind of before the market opened on Friday. And so it has bounced back a little bit, but not enough to, once again, recover those losses. And I am starting to worry a bit about the Bitcoin price. Yeah, we bottomed about around 110. Now we're up to 115. But like I said, still well below the highs from Friday, which were right around 124. WTI ended up 1%, although it was down 3.3% last week. So still below $60 a barrel for the first time since early May. So that was the market today. Not much economic news because of the government shutdown. It looks like this will drag on for some time. The market so far isn't really worried about it. I think there's a lot of, there's the lack of data that the market, I think, kind of likes, right? There's not raising any red flags, even though you do have credit markets that are starting to, I don't want to say come undone, but some of the recent bankruptcies like First Brands and Tricolor are starting to shed some light in the leverage that's within the system. And then also how the tariff policies are impacting these companies with leverage. I mean, there's a lot of private equity, private debt that was invested in a lot of product companies. Their idea was to layer on the debt, harvest the free cash flow, streamline the business, create efficiencies, and then pay down the low cost of the debt. Well, that works for some time until there's a disruption in the margins, which a lot of these physical product businesses operate on very thin margins. So the fact that you're seeing bankruptcies there means that there's probably more problems underneath the surface. And while equity markets bounced back today, the credit markets didn't bounce back nearly to the extent. It was probably up a third of the losses from Friday. So overall, that's not good. Now, in order to get a real trend reversal, we will need some follow through from Friday, meaning markets, both on the credit as well as the fixed income side, credit plus the equity side, that needs to close at lower levels than we closed on Friday. Okay, so there will be more, I think, said tomorrow once the true credit markets are open. What I was looking at are ETFs. ETFs bounce back, but those ETFs, those are exchange traded funds, but the actual underlying bonds did not trade. So it's a good proxy for what's going to happen in the bond market. But overall, we'll get better clarity once bond markets start trading tomorrow. So that was the market today. A little bit of optimism, but still TBD based on what will likely be more rhetoric throughout the month, and be ready for more volatility. Now, every day we receive questions from the comment section over on the Invest Talk YouTube channel. And Selena Marie says, I own IDR. I'm up 188%. IDR is 6.9% of my portfolio. I also own B, which is 4.9% of my portfolio. FNV, which is 4.3%. My total gold holdings are 16.1% of my portfolio. I also own PAS, which is 4.5%. So that's a silver miner. So that's over 20%. Question is, should I take profits from IDR, Idaho Strategic Resources, and rebalance my gold position and enter FCX instead? Or do you see a continued upside in IDR? Every time I think about selling IDR, it's another tremendous up day. Well, this is one of those junior miners, $708 million market cap after this massive run. And I would say, yeah, this is a good time to trim. It's starting to become a hefty part of your portfolio, over 5%. You're up to about 7% of the portfolio, especially after today. This would be a good time to trim it. Now, I think about 20% of an aggressive portfolio in precious metals and miners, not a bad thing. I think that's pretty good. Although, understand that these names are very volatile. So 20, 30, 40% pullback even is very common from the peak. When do they peak is always hard to know, but this is a time where I would be trimming a little bit, cutting that position by about a third. Now we're moving into a break, still to come. My focus point, more answers to your questions. So give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about InvestTalk Innovators? It's available now free on the InvestTalk YouTube channel. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero interview company leaders, founders, and visionaries. So head over to the InvestTalk YouTube channel and look for InvestTalk Innovators.
It 99 chart, 8-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, my main focus point is about three costly mistakes that novice investors make when investing in dividend stocks. I love this topic. I've given you this advice throughout the years in random calls asking about different dividend paying stocks. But I wanted to cover it in one cohesive segment because investing in dividend stocks to create an income stream sounds really easy. But when it comes to investing, nothing is a walk in the park. Nothing can be summed up in one data point. And avoiding the mistakes that the average novice investor makes will help you make much better long-term returns with or without dividends, okay? And so the number one is, which I say all the time, which is focusing too much on yield. Meaning, 6%, 7%, 12%, 10%, that sounds great. But it's kind of like buying a used car that just had a paint job, without actually looking under the hood to see if the car can get you from point A to point B. High dividend paying stocks sound good in practice. Sorry, sound good in theory. But actually, the highest dividend paying stocks are the worst performing stocks in aggregate, if you're looking at the top decile. Why is that? Because the market is pricing it accordingly. When you're seeing much higher dividends than the average within a particular sector, for example, the market is saying something. And I say the sector because I think it's important to delineate. Utility stocks, they almost all pay a dividend to some degree. you know, the average in the sector is probably 3%, maybe 4. I'm not sure exactly, somewhere in that range. So if you see a utility stock yielding 8%, well, there's risk there. Why? And then you have to assess whether that risk is smart. You don't throw them out completely, but understand that there's extra risk there. Usually it's in the form of a bad balance sheet. That's the most concerning data point that you have to check for when looking at dividend paying stocks. Do they have a solid balance sheet? Then you want to look at the quality of their earnings. Is that dividend sustainable? Because if it's not, not only do you see declines in your income, but there is a decline in the stock price that will happen when that dividend is cut. So make sure you're assessing for stable revenues and profits, understanding how cyclical the name is. Does the company have long-term growth prospects at all? Or is it just relying on some old business that is slowly dying? And the most important question that's not quantitative is, what's its competitive advantage? That's a qualitative question. And are the profitability metrics high consistently? Not just for 1 year or a couple of years, but consistently. Is this a name that has had mid to high teens in return equity for a long period of time? Now, it can always have little dips here and there, but you want to see what's the average? What's the median over the past 10, 20 years? And that will create a consistent dividend track record, hopefully, as well. Then you want to look at dividend coverage. Once again, how much earnings are they producing in order to pay that dividend? If it should be 2 or higher, meaning they should have a payout ratio around 50% or lower, as soon as it gets up into the 70s or 80s, you worry a little bit. If it's at 100 or more, obviously you're very worried. And then lastly is relying too much on one particular entity or a small number and relying on one particular sector. We see this a lot with tech names right now, but this happens in the income space as well, where you're just buying consumer staples. You're just buying utilities. You're just buying telecom names because those are the ones that have the highest dividends, dividend yield, shall we say. But I guarantee you there are good, and we do it now. We have in our income balancing, for example, strategy, it has roughly 60% equities. And there's representation in that portfolio in every sector. So there's some name within every sector that has a good business, good valuation, good return profile, and a solid, consistent growing dividend. So make sure that you are not being over-reliant on one particular subsector of the market. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into the story. The Sun Belt Paradox, why retirement hotspots like Florida and Arizona face a social security crisis. These are top destinations for retirees, but residents in areas like Florida and Arizona face a disproportionate risk in event of any reduction in promised social security benefits. That story tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein, and I'm ready to take your calls right now at 888-99-CHART. Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you, not for you. Let me tell you how we use Claude. We use Claude to build widgets on our website and to build a data dashboard using data from various information sources. Claude doesn't just give us answers. It helps us think through the problem. For example, Claude found connections across 50 plus sources that we never would have spotted ourselves. With Claude AI, you can connect to your work tools and data, create custom workflows, and benefit from extended thinking mode that maintains context and understanding throughout extensive conversations. Claude is for everyone: financial services, education, AI agents, and coders. Ready to tackle bigger problems? Sign up for Claude today and get 50% off Claude Pro when you use my link, claude.ai/invest. That's claude.ai/invest right now for 50% off your first 3 months of Claude Pro. that includes access to all the features mentioned in today's episode. Claude.ai/invest.
Millions of downloads have proved there's value in every Invest Talk podcast. Call anytime, 24/7. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Matt in Miami. I was just giving you a call if you could take a look at ticker symbol PRYMF, Prysmian, SBA. It's an Italian company that develops the fiber optic cables for AI infrastructure. So kind of going along the pickaxe theme that you guys talked about with your recent webinar. It looks a little overvalued at this point, and I'm kind of wondering, kind of along the lines of what you talked about, where maybe if they have some slowdown in the development of these data centers or a pullback, it'd be an opportunity to get in where it's not as expensive. Looking forward to what you guys think on the podcast. Thank you very much.
Interesting one. This is a name. Let's see if I can know these four names. Oh, yeah. Headquartered in Milan, Italy. Love Milan. Great city. If you've ever been there. Now, they develop, design, manufacture, supply, and install cables, like you said, through different segments, energy, projects, and telecom. Okay. And it is near a 52-week high. About a $30 billion market cap currently. Good balance sheet. Free cash flow, though, only about $1 billion. So that's what's interesting is, at least the most recent trailing 12 months, about $1 billion. It's not a great free cash flow yield. But if you look at its profitability, it's around 15% return on equity, which is good. Not amazing, but good. And its long-term average is closer to 13%. So, solid name. I like foreign exposure right now. More money is starting to flow over there. Their dividend is rising. I also like that. And you're starting to see some deals being announced to build AI infrastructure in Europe. So I like that as well. So I like this business. I like the profitability. I like the balance sheet. But it has moved pretty far, pretty fast. It bottomed in April around $43 per share. Now we're at $104. So yeah, this is the type of name that I would have on my watch list to buy on a reasonable pullback. Right now, enterprise value to EBITDA is around 16 times. And that is near the high end of its range that it typically trades at. It's low end is around 9 or 10. So this gets back down in the 10 to 12 range. That's where I'd probably want to pick it up. So a pullback back into the 60s, I think would be a great place to pick up this name. Prysmian. Prysmian is the name. PRYMF is the symbol. Thanks for the call. Now let's play two in a row from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Dan from Walnut Creek. Might have even been a couple of years ago now that Justin liked Lumen Technologies, L-U-M-N. I've been kind of keeping an eye on it, and I set an alert, and it hit that alert when it went up to $6.50. I was wondering what you guys thought of the stock at this point. Thanks very much. Bye.
Looking at Lumen Technologies, this is a name that was trading at a very deep discount a couple of years ago, trading at $1 per share. The market was thinking it was going to go bankrupt. And I looked at the business, and I said, their assets are just worth too much. And they've been slowly selling off assets, which has kind of hurt their overall profits. But if you look at their cash flow, it's come down, but it looks like it's stabilized around $1 billion per year. Now, that is down from 2021 levels around $3.7 billion, but they needed to delever their balance sheet in a material way. And once again, they've done that. Debt peaked out around $37 billion, now we're at about $18 billion. And so that is, it's good. The price has rallied considerably, hit a recent high around $10 per share, pulled back to $3 per share. Now we're at $6 and change. So it's been an uptrend since last summer. That's the positive. And the business prospects of paying down that debt continue to be pretty solid. Now they cut their dividend. This is a good example of one of those names. I believe it paid a dividend. Yeah, it did. Up until 2018, it paid 54 cents. And then they cut it in 2019 down to 25 cents. And it stayed there until August of 2022. And then it eliminated its dividend. Let me show you what happened on that date. Yeah, that was, it went down from $7 all the way to $5 and then trended all the way to $1.20. So this example, going back to our original topic, which is avoiding the pitfalls of high dividend yields. Back then, it was paying a nearly 20% yield on its shares. But clearly the market was saying, no, they're not going to pay that. It's going to get eliminated because they need that cash flow to pay down their debt. And that's exactly what they did. Now, is it good enough yet to buy? I think after this rally, I think you kind of missed it. Here's my issue with it, is that they've sold off most of their good assets and they've tried to institute a growth strategy and it hasn't really worked. Earnings are still supposed to be negative in the next couple of years. I'm not too worried about that because this is more of a cash flow question. And so after this run, I don't think it's a great value anymore. So I'm going to pass on Lumen. Thanks for the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. It's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Let's talk a little bit about tariffs. And we had the tariff scare over the weekend. But the question is, how much of these tariffs are being felt by the consumer? It's been about 6 months. It's been a very disjointed 6 months when it comes to policy and implementation and understanding of what they will be. And you're starting to get studies on this. And it's pretty clear that both U.S. companies and consumers are the ones bearing the most of the brunt of the new tariffs. That's what these academic studies, surveys, and comments from businesses are saying. That it's been gradual, but there's clearly an upward trend. Now, researchers have tracked 359,000 goods from things like carpets to coffee at major online retailers, as well as brick and mortar retailers here in the US. Now, what do they find? Imported goods have become about 4% more expensive since Liberation Day. Domestically produced goods are up by about 2%. Now, the biggest increases were seen in goods that we cannot produce domestically, meaning that those foreign countries have bargaining power and that the companies that are buying them in, they don't have a lot of other options. They need, their end customers need those products, and so they pay the tariffs and they import them. Things like coffee, for example, we don't grow that here. And things from highly penalized countries like Turkey. Now, the price increases have been smaller than the actual tariff rate. So it is showing you that resellers and the importers, they're actually absorbing some of the costs. But some of it is being passed on to consumers. Now, if you look at U.S. import prices, which don't include tariffs, foreign exporters are raising their prices in dollars. And a lot of this has to do with the weaker dollar, depreciation in the dollar. So our dollar doesn't go as far. So they're just raising their prices in dollar terms. So foreign producers are not absorbing any of the U.S. tariffs or our currency depreciation. The cost of goods exported by China, Germany, Mexico, Turkey, and India, they're all up. The only one that's exception is Japan. Now, so far, the tariffs, the average tariff is estimated to be about 17%, and the implementation still is not complete. And around 72% of companies in Europe, Middle East, Africa, this is tracked by Reuters, are flagging higher prices. And they also looked at e-commerce giants like Shein and Amazon. They're showing price increases as well, especially for Chinese products sold here. Now, the Peterson Institute, they estimate that the inflation over the next year will be 1 percentage point higher than if tariffs hadn't been raised at all. And demand is declining. So S&P Global Survey of Purchasing Managers at companies all across the world, they show new export orders contracting at an increasing rate starting in June. So June is when I think remember there was the front loading of tariffs to bring in a lot of inventory. But June was the time when, okay, we need more stuff. We need more stuff for back to school. We need to start prepping for holiday season, for example. And they really started to just eat the tariffs. Imports from the EU down 4.4% in July, and Germany down 20% from in August. So the impact of U.S. tariffs overall hasn't completely materialized. But those impacts are going to be felt more and more as we get into the latter months of the year, and especially into 2026. Now let's tackle a YouTube question. Carter Erickson says, I noticed KBR just hit a 52-week low. Do you think it's worth buying here, or is it a value trap? Value trap. Looking at KBR. This is... provides science, tech, engineering, and logistics support solutions to governments and companies around the world. This isn't a nice little downturn. And the question is why? Because earnings are expected to be up 15% this year and then 9% next year. $4.20 in earnings next year. I like that. On a $44 stock, you're talking about a 10 times forward-looking multiple. Now, how much of this, okay, this is around R&D. I'm just trying to see what they do, because this is a relatively small name, $5.7 billion market cap. Now, the worry is government cutting spending. They do have a good amount of debt, about a little over $3 billion on a $5.7 billion market cap. Free cash flow is solid, around $424 million. That's near the record high. So that's a fairly good free cash flow, about 5% free cash flow yield compared to the enterprise value. Dividend yield is 1.5%, solid. Return equity, 27%, solid. I like that. But like you said, it's in a downtrend. And until it can buck that downtrend, I would just lay off it. Market tells you something. You know, you want to dig deeper. What is the market sniffing out here that you are not? And this happens all the time. We see this all the time. That's why we have a three-pronged approach when we're looking at investing. If the macro view, what's going on with broader growth of the economy and inflation, and based on that, certain sectors do better than others. And then the fundamentals, finding the best companies within the particular sectors. And then the technicals. So is the underlying quality of the business being reflected in the stock price? Is it outperforming its sector? Is it outperforming the market? And if you don't really check the boxes on all those, then there's probably another name that will. And that's why I would be interested in this, because of the fundamentals. But ultimately, that chart is telling me, I'm passing on it. So keep it on your watch list and wait until the technicals start to improve. Now, we still have some time, so let's play another voice question now.
Hey, guys. I love the show. I got a quick question about 401k investing. My company offers a pre-tax allocation that I can invest in. I know what the difference is between a Roth IRA and a traditional IRA, but could you tell me what the difference is between a pre-tax contribution versus a Roth IRA? Thanks.
Pre-tax is just simply a contribution to a traditional 401k or IRA. That's what it means, is you didn't pay tax on that money, pre-tax, because you're writing off that contribution on your taxes. That is a traditional IRA or 401k contribution. A post-tax is a Roth contribution, whether that's a Roth IRA or a Roth 401k. Now remember, the only thing that matters, I'll say the only thing, mostly what matters is what's your tax rate today versus in the future. If in the future you're going to have the ability to do Roth conversions, or maybe you'll make less money for whatever reason, then you want to wait. You want to put it into pre-tax and then do conversions later if you're going to be in a lower tax bracket. But if you're in a relatively low tax bracket today, you think you're going to build wealth over time, you're going to have huge, I don't know, maybe you're you own a business, or you have a bunch of real estate that you're going to get income from in retirement, whatever that is. If you're going to be in a higher tax bracket well into the future, well, a Roth contribution might make sense. So it's about being strategic. You don't want to look for ways to get money into a Roth IRA, but you want to do that at an advantageous tax rate. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday is to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk is ready 24/7 for your finance and investment questions.
I'm hoping you'll give me your take on Ormat Technologies, ORA.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Don't forget to call Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
...2025 rolls on, and you might have some fresh questions for Justin or Luke. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. Love the podcast and would love your opinion on Procter & Gamble, PG, to start adding a position to my portfolio. It looks like the five-year historical metrics are all at lows at the current valuation, so would love your opinion. I know free cash flow looks to be falling slightly, but still looks strong, and would just love your outlook for the next long-term 5 to 10 years. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Looking at Procter & Gamble, I don't think I need to explain what Procter & Gamble does. Well, maybe I do. Maybe some of the younger cohort. They own a ton of giant brands. Think Tide. It's probably their biggest, but they have a million other brands like Gillette, Love's, Pampers, Bounce, Downy, Gain, Charmin, Puffs, Always, Braun, Gillette. I mean, they're just Head and Shoulders, Old Spice, Cascade. I mean, they have every major brand that's in your pantry. It's probably Procter & Gamble. Been around for a long, long time. But as the caller said, their cash flow is starting to dwindle a little bit. Still robust, $14 billion trailing 12 months, but down from a high of $16.7 billion just a couple quarters ago. Now, how much of this is tariff-related? Importing their products, their supply chain is global. And so my guess is they're eating a lot of these margins, or they're passing along to consumers, and consumers are opting for maybe a store brand. Last quarter, revenues were only up 2%. Earnings are up 6%. But expectations for this year's earnings continue to come down, as well as next year. And if I look at the multiples trading at, enterprise value to EBITDA right around 16.25, that is near the low end of its recent range since COVID. But back during, before COVID, it was trading closer to 14. Dividend yield is 2.8%. It certainly can afford that. Solid balance sheet. I like that. So this one's difficult because I certainly like the business, but there are headwinds that you can't deny. Now, where is the major support on the technicals? Honestly, it's down around 140. Now we're trading at, where are we? 147. So about 5% downside from here. But it's a name that typically doesn't have a lot of volatility. So this is the name I'd probably, way to enter this is sell some puts. Maybe down around the 140 level to potentially get into it. I like the business. I like the balance sheet. I worry a bit about its exposure to tariffs and alternatives if people are trading down from Tide to maybe the store-bought brand. But because the technicals are so poor, I'd be very patient on it and at least wait until the 140 level. Thanks for the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Let's talk a little bit about the average Gen Z buyer of a home. Well, it's just not happening. And what most of them are doing is investing in the stock market. Gen Z, those born between 1997 and 2012, have a home ownership rate of just 16%. And first-time home buyers are at an all-time low because of the affordability crisis. Then you add in the costs of things like insurance, property tax, and maintenance. They're all much higher than they were previously. So the total all-in cost of buying a home for most people consumes half or more of their income. So what are most of this generation doing? Well, instead, they're searching for better returns elsewhere. And frankly, I understand it. They say, why stretch to buy in an overpriced housing market when you could rent and invest the cash in stocks, for example? Now, most of them have known a time when equities averaged 14% a year, which is, frankly, not common. If you look back in history, closer to 10% on average. So they feel like the equity markets are safer than they probably really are. But they're all just opening new accounts. JP Morgan found that 37% of 25-year-olds used investment account or opened investment accounts in 2024. That's up from 6% in 2015. Think about that. So this is a trend I don't think is going to change until the housing crisis shifts, and it's a more palatable time to buy real estate. And so until then, you know, that's just new money heading into markets, but doesn't come without risks. So just heads up on that. I wanted to highlight that trend because I think it is having a major impact on markets. I'm Justin Klein. Today's show made you think about your financial picture in any way, your investments, your taxes, your retirement strategy and plan, your Roth conversion plan, your Social Security strategy. Whether it's all working for you, let's talk about it. We offer a free no-cost portfolio review at my company, KPP Financial. And this is designed to help bring clarity and confidence to your overall situation. Just head over to investtalk.com, click on the portfolio review button. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast download, which you can find anytime at iTunes or Spotify, and head over to our YouTube channel as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.